Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody?
We can do that on the show.
I was going to start, but now I'm not going to.
Right.
More come on, start. I dare you.
Fine, I will.
But not because I want you to.
Yeah.
Because you're going to anyways.
Yeah. What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We've got the party cast here. We've got Brooke here. We've got Tim here. We've got Chris here. And we've got Purnell here. Yay.
He only started the show because we made him do it. He wasn't going to do it otherwise.
Didn't you take over the show when you quit like a month ago?
What?
Immediately snitching about.
Didn't you like hijack my show and then quit like a month ago?
That was a little longer than a month.
Okay.
I feel like it was last year. A couple months
ago. Well, whatever. Yeah.
Time moves like a snail.
So, Purnell, I am drinking something interesting today.
I'm going to guess it's not strawberries and cream Dr. Pepper.
It is not, because I can't find that shit anywhere.
I just bought a can today. I'm like, it's sad. I was like, I'm going to go on a 2,000 calorie diet. And then I go to the grocery store and it's like, fucking strawberries and cream Dr. Pepper. Like, you bitch.
You lucky bastard. Well,
there's your 2,000.
Yeah. One can. One can. One goddamn can. But what are you drinking then?
I am drinking Peeps flavored Pepsi.
Oh,
you got some, you lucky bitch. I want to try that. I know you're going to say it's disgusting, but I think I'll like it.
It's okay. It's like a sweeter version of Pepsi, which is what we all need. Something sweeter than Pepsi.
I mean, it makes it. I mean, all Peeps are is sugar. I mean, yeah. What else is it going to be? So
I'm just incredibly, incredibly pissed off that they did not call it Peepsy.
Oh my God.
That is worth being pissed about. Absolutely.
I will say, you mean peeps about? Anyways, two notes here. One, the Peeps flavored Oreos were the worst Oreos I've ever tasted. When my child is getting soda, he likes to do a mix of strawberry lemonade with like vanilla Coke. And I'm just like, whatever,
what?
I kind of want to try that now.
Lemonade and Coke.
Like pink lemonade specifically with vanilla Coke specifically.
Hey.
Yeah,
I'm not knocking the kid. That sounds like
I don't know about it either. It seems like something like I thought would be a good flavor combination idea when I was his age and like later like not. But it's all, I think I did have it once and it was just kind of like he proportions it in a certain way, so it's kind of like a vanilla-y fizzy lemonade.
Well, I mean, you've got a junior mixologist on your hands. Don't knock the flow. The man makes the kid makes good drinks.
I'm not knocking whatever makes him not turn into a little bitch in public, so it's fine.
He starts throwing a tantrum. Quick, get him some strawberry lemonade.
With a bit of vanilla. Yeah, no, it's fine. It's like I'm just like, dude, whatever is what you do. I don't give a shit.
There's no time. Just do as I say.
The craziest mixing I would get at the store would be like orange Hi-C and Sprite at McDonald's. That's as crazy as I get with the mixing.
I mean,
a soda aficionado stops at that when there's a freaking Coke remix or those freestyle machines out there.
Well, they didn't have the freestyle machines back in the day.
Yeah.
For now. Yeah. Well, he can do it now.
Now you can make an affront to God every time you go to Wendy's.
Yeah, those aren't mix-ups. You just do whatever the fuck you want now.
But that's what counts. Freestyle. I mean, it's literally the same concept of mixing various flavored syrups. Or in the case of Tim's kid, lemonade. But you can get some strawberry lemonade, whatever soda or the high C variant that's in the can. And then go, I'm going to throw some fucking Dr. Pepper in there, too. And it all works.
I don't think my child thinks in F words, but,
Hey, he might think it, but he knows better than to say it because his dad disapproves.
Yeah. Just sitting there imagining
his father is like very much against the use of the word fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, coming out of the mouth of a child.
Try not to. Try not to. It's not that easy. As long as he doesn't say the words in school, I don't care.
That's that fair.
Yeah, that's what I don't want to hear about from school is like, why is your child saying motherfucker?
No, I mean, did you do that?
So your child was running down the halls yelling, "Scissor me, daddy ass," today. Is there something we should know about?
Still can't believe I never got that phone call home.
Don't tempt fate.
We went to the vet this morning and I realized I was wearing my "Scissor Me Daddy Ass" shirt. And I'm like, wow, I probably should have worn something a little bit different. So I just zipped my hoodie up.
Went incognito. I mean,
the vet understands. If anybody's going to understand, I'm sure it's the vet.
Oh, yeah. The vet's going to see that shirt and be like, oh, there's an AEW guy right there.
Scissors indeed.
Scissor me timbers. How was everyone's weekend?
Not as good now. Now I know there could have been such a thing as a Scissor Me Timbers shirt, and I don't have it. Now, that's a pun. But other than that, my weekend was okay.
It's scissoring for Valentine's Day.
I played through the Goonies 2 as my first 4 in February game. I haven't played the game since 1989. And
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was just going to say, looking forward to that because it's on the Nintendo Power Top 100, so I have to beat it at some point myself.
Are you intending to do anything? Are you going to go blind or use an FAQ if you get completely stuck?
I'm going to go blind, I think, I mean...
But again, you're not on a time crunch. You could probably do that.
Yeah, I also... I'm not that bad at doing games blind. I mean, you know, I just beat Legend of Zelda Second Quest blind, and it was pretty good.
Okay, well, the reason why I'm saying that is because so I beat the game as a kid, and the only thing I got stuck on back then and I needed help so much so that I called Nintendo Power was I couldn't find the diving suit, and it required me to do a thing that up to that point in the game I never did. So that was why it never clicked. Nice. Oh, that works. So now as an adult, I was like, well, I remember how to get the fucking diving suit. I never forgot that. But then the problem is I forgot where the last Goonie was. And I'm like reading the map using information I got from playing La Mulana because it has a similar style of mapping. So I'm like, okay, this thing says that there's a Goonie right there. Tile breakdown implies that the caves are right here. There should be a door there, which leads to the back, which then comes back to the front. But I was like stumped on it. I was like, where the fuck is this kid? So I went, ran all around, saw the thing, came back. And then my friend I was playing with was like, I'm going to Google this. And just so I can see how far off the mark you were. And he Googles like, oh, God, I'm not going to let you suffer like this. Go back to that room you were in. Because apparently the game, when you have to knock on walls, it's particular about if you knock with your fist or the hammer. And it's very particular about how close to the center of the screen you are. Because if you're not directly in the center, it doesn't count as a knock. And I was like, yeah, be fucking kidding me. I didn't get it because I was slightly off center and it didn't count as me hitting the wall. I was very livid. But then from that... That was the only thing I stuck on, and after that was like smooth sailing. But also, my friend insisted on using classic NES hardware, and of course, the game crashed. So
yeah, I'm doing all original hardware and software.
Oh Christ! And you might suffer the same problem then, because what I had to do
it was 2 weeks ago now, but I beat Castlevania 3 for the first time, and
oh, congrats.
Thank you. And halfway through the final battle, my cart crashed.
Oh, God.
So did you play the whole thing again? Because that game, I don't think had. I don't remember.
Only the whole of the last level. Because I did get my password. I was very studious about getting my password every time.
You made the right call.
That's still three or four levels that you have to go through every single time. But I mean, that's the beauty of Castlevania 3 is that it starts you over at the very beginning of the level every single time you die at Dracula. So
I will say this though, count your blessings on the game of choice though, because if I remember correctly, the passwords in Castlevania are icons based off of the weapons that you get in the game. And the Goonies is all characters. So what happened when the game crashed was I was like, okay, well, maybe someone on the internet has a password that puts me somewhere where I left off. And sure enough, There was a password where the only difference was the guy had a raincoat. And I was like, I'll deal with it because I would have found the fucking thing on my own. I don't give a shit. All right. So I was like, this is going to put me back because I'm not playing this whole thing. I was like 3 hours in. I was like, I'm not doing this again. So I put the password in and it doesn't work. I'm like, why isn't the password working? Turns out the password had 4 quotation marks. And in the game, the quotation could face left or right.
Oh,
but
God.
On text, you can't tell which version it is. So I had to try every permutation.
Wow.
Of quotation forward or backwards until it actually worked.
What's the other? It's Metroid and this other game that I used to play as a kid that you had to be so specific as to, like, and it had so many characters that looked alike.
I don't know if this was the game, but Legend of Mystical Ninja was like that.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, that was another one.
I'd write down the password, and then I'd go back to put it back, and I'd just be like, oh, no.
This ain't happening.
It was so many characters, and yeah, it was brutal. Because, you know, it's like tracking your money and equipment and... so much it was a disaster.
Yeah, exactly. No, you got it right on the money. That's because I played that game like back when it came out, so you know,
yep.
That's I had that trouble for sure back before we could just take pictures of a screen without having to go to Eckerd to develop the film.
I gotta say, man, don't take save states for, or not save states, but just saving your game for granted, because that bullshit, man. You want to record your play of a game? Get a VHS tape out, set that fucker to EP, let it rip, and then mail the tape in when you want people to see what you did.
Yeah, I don't remember what old game it was that Richard was playing, because, you know, he started playing modern games, so he's very used to this idea of the autosave, and he played some old game, and he stepped right in it. Just did not know. It's like, wait, what happened to my game? I think it was when he went to an older Pokemon game, so it was, like, especially brutal. Yeah. Like, he keeps forgetting, like, the DS battery doesn't last forever. You do have to plug it in. Like, you don't, Especially now. Yeah, for sure.
Jeez. Actually, kind of like, wait, why do you say especially now?
Oh, like a 20-year-old battery?
On the DS, it's, you know, like, it's a 2DS. It's like a 10-year-old battery, but still. It doesn't.
I don't know. Oh, yeah.
I think he leaves it, like, on in sleep mode. That's part of the problem.
Mm.
And then it won't last as long. I will say that my 3DS XL, it can sit up there for like a year or two. I'll pull that sucker out, it'll turn right on.
I'm telling you, count your blessings. I just had to replace my 3DS XL battery because it stopped holding a charge for shit.
And yeah, mine's still great.
And I'm actually thankful that it happened now, because you can still buy the battery from Nintendo instead of to take a chance on some random reverse engineered battery where it's like, my 3DS exploded.
Problems when I sold my 3DS was that the battery was just shot and it didn't hold a charge at all.
Yeah, at least like whoever bought it, at least again, they can buy a battery. You know, I have a PSP battery that a friend gave me as a replacement, and it's just some random company I've never heard of in my damn life. Like, yeah, my PSP is fucked. I can't put this thing in there, it's going to just erupt. But hey, I can play my shit. That's got to be enough.
Oh man. So speaking of playing old video games in modern times, I figured out how to get standard FPS controls on the GoldenEye 007 on Nintendo Switch Online, because it does not do it by default.
What did you do?
Of course you can remap the Pro Controller, and I found out that you can switch the sticks. And so you can make the right stick do the left stick's job and vice versa. If you do that and you switch around the shoulder buttons correctly, then you can set the game itself to solitaire mode, which is the only mode that fully puts the looking to one stick and, you know, because it was the C buttons and the movement to the other. I'm sorry, movement was the C buttons and looking around was the stick. But then it
didn't you make that exact same mistake when you were describing it on Twitter?
Yeah, I did. because, like, you'd think looking around with the C buttons, right? But you don't. In solitaire, it moves. Because, like, the other ones, it's like left and right on the C buttons will look left and right, but like up and down will move. That's the problem. So like if you map it to solitaire and then reverse the sticks, then you have the left stick moves and the right stick looks. And and like I said, you can change like ZL to ZR so that the right trigger is the trigger button instead of the left trigger. And then I just set the L button to the R function, which means that to the R function, which means that like you can hold the left bumper to aim. So left bumper aim, right bumper shoot, sticks work. It's great. I love it so much more than on the actual N64 now. So, but I mean, you do have to set that. And then, of course, there's no like macros or anything. So you have to do it that way every time you want to play. But hey, Yay. Whatever.
Price you pay for fun and convenience.
Yeah.
I think the Xbox version has new controls for it, but I haven't fired it up yet. So I don't know.
It does. Yes. Does it? Yep.
Yeah, they just slapped on new controls on it, and we're like, oh, that's good.
I think that's all they were allowed to do.
Yeah, Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to just ask, like, so are you saying, like, there's actually conditions in place, you think, where they were like, no changes, has to be pure?
I think...
Pretty much.
I'm guessing that the James Bond estate was very specific. Either that or Nintendo was very specific.
I think it's
in
Nintendo.
What was allowed. Just because of the whole rights issue and it finally coming out, but
it doesn't have online play, which
Oh, that's just, right. That's what it is.
Everyone's freaking out. Like the Switch version has online. No, it doesn't. The emulator has online. The game has not been changed at all. The game does not have native online play on the Switch. The emulator does,
and that's why it works.
Yeah, like it does work though, right?
For online, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, none of this is what I want to talk about. There's one thing I want to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about Brooke's rabbit. Come on.
Brooke, tell us about the bun bun
of the week.
Oh my God. Actually, we just took him to his first vet appointment today. He did great.
Did you name him Oddjob?
What?
Did you name him Oddjob?
Did I name who Oddjob? My rabbit?
Yeah, it was a roundabout from the GoldenEye conversation.
Great joke for now.
Hey, hush your fuss. It was a great joke. It was a good joke. Anyway,
I believe it was a great joke. I just didn't get it.
No, it wasn't. No.
Hey, don't listen to Tim. He's insincere.
No, we named him Brisket. We named him Brisket because he has little black pieces on him, and those are his burn ends, and because his dad and I met in Texas, and because he's so juicy and delicious. Aww. And we named him Brisket also. Full name's Brisket McNug. Pool of Rose. We also named him Brisket because I don't know if you guys ever saw Cutthroat Kitchen. I wasn't a huge fan of Cutthroat Kitchen, but there's an episode where the guy makes brisket and gravy instead of biscuit and gravy.
Okay.
I remember that.
We gotta talk about that later. I don't want to give any spoilers, but like I love that episode so much.
Oh, I'll spoil it. He advanced anyway because it was good.
I'll say that's the spoiler that I want. Did the judges like it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Alton was like, y'all need to make biscuit and gravy, and all three the contestants were like, cool, all right. And then one guy shows up at the very end of the round. He's like, oh, I thought Alton said brisket and gravy because English wasn't his first language. And Alton goes, you know what? That's legit. I didn't clarify. So now we got to judge it as brisket and gravy. Well, and the judges were like, this is certainly brisket and gravy.
Yeah. The other host was also not English wasn't his first language either. The other chef. And so he empathized with the guy.
That's cool. I don't even remember that.
I remember that episode. That show is so good.
I miss that show. That was a fun show to watch.
I have a complicated relationship with Cutthroat Kitchen because when I was a teenager, my big celebrity crush was Alton Brown, as in Good Eats Alton Brown. Like, that was just my dude. He was wearing a Hawaiian shirt, a little bit chubby, big old nerd. I just thought he was awesome. And now he's like become this Food Network's turned him into this maniacal, like, evil scientist thing, and it just doesn't feel like old school Alton to me. Like, it's not. Everybody was so happy for me when he got more famous, so they're like, "Oh, your boy Alton's got his all these different shows," and I was like, "It's not the same, man." So, like, it's. So,
see, I like well, the sadistic Alton Brown.
I like.
What made it cutthroat?
Rabbit. We keep going off topic.
Pernell, see me after class. We'll talk about Cutthroat Kitchen. But yeah, my rabbit, he's awesome. He's so cool. It's funny because Carrie and I were waiting to get a rabbit. I really wanted a rabbit for a long time, but we had a neighbor who we babysit her cat all the time, special needs cat, and he's just like the sweetest baby in the world. He likes to be picked up and held like a baby and just petted 24/7. Like, we'd get upset if you stop petting him. He's like the perfect cat. But he's scared of everything. He used to be a stray and he's had like a really hard life. So you can pet him all you want, but he will never come out of the back of the closet. So we would babysit this cat and we just hang out in the back of the closet with him and pet him because he's too scared to do anything. But he's just so full of love. And we were like, we thought maybe we'd end up adopting this cat because we thought she was going to get deported if the Google layoffs had hit her. But they didn't hit her. So she gets to stay in America. She's keeping her cat. But it was a little bittersweet for us because we're like, we're not going to get the scaredy cat. But that meant I could move forward and finally get a rabbit. So that kind of also answers Pernell's question, too, as to like why I was waiting a certain day and to a certain time to try to like secure one to adopt.
I thought that was answering his Cutthroat Kitchen question. Okay.
I was going to say that, too.
No, Pernell had asked me like a really long time ago why I was waiting till like February something or other. And like, it's kind of it was a complicated answer for a lot of reasons. But like, so we ended up with this rabbit, and rabbits are famously scared of everything, right? And like, but
they are prey animals.
There.
They are evolved to be hunted, you know, and
they're so delicious.
All of their instincts are to be not, you know, grabbed by large creatures instinctively, you know.
Yeah. I was reading all this crap about, oh, it might take months for me to get to pick him up because he needs to be on a hard surface because he's a prey animal and all this stuff. He's not a regular rabbit, you guys. He's a little dog. There's something going on here. But we just had to keep laughing, like with the vets too, like knew the animals. We're like, oh, we ended up with like a rabbit that's not scared of everything. And we were waiting to get it until to see if the cat that was scared of everything. I don't know. I didn't really connect this together like I wanted to, but it's been funny to see this happen. Like, all the vets and vet technicians were like, oh, he's fine. Like, he's not scared of anything. He wasn't freaked out by anything. They gave him like his vaccination shot and he didn't even move. And then he went to try to get petted by the same lady that gave him the vaccination shot like 5 seconds later. And he's like, excuse me, can I have some attention? It's just so, it was darling.
That's awesome.
I'm in love. I'm totally in love. I'm just having a great time. He's at my feet right now.
Aww. McNug.
But yeah, then I realized that I had made, yeah, McNug. I had to brand him, give him the McDonald's branding, but he's also just like a juicy little nug to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm really happy. But before we moved on to reviews, I actually had a non-rabbit topic I wanted to bring up for our chat. I had two general video game questions, if I could ask you guys. No reason, completely unrelated to the review that Tim and I will be doing in a couple minutes. What's the difference between a brawler, a hack and slash, and a beat 'em up?
Brawler, a hack and slash, and a beat 'em up. Okay. Like, are those I feel like brawler and hack and slash and beat 'em up are the same thing, but a hack and slash is specific.
It involves slash weapons, like swords and shit.
Not so much even just that. I feel like a hack and slash, and the times I'm used to hearing it being referred to as such, usually involves very fast, precise movements. I mean, I ain't so much precise, but very fast movements. It's fluid. So it's less about, you know, pulling off like, okay, I'm going to get this like cool punch combo going, pick up the weapon on the ground or whatever, and more about running from target to target very quickly and just like efficiently taking enemies out. Like more like Ninja Gaiden 3D, the 3D Ninja Gaiden games in that regard as a hack and slash. Whereas like, I don't know, like, obviously, generally 2D, obviously, but things like Streets of Rage or Fightin' Rage, and all those are, like, considered generally beat-em-ups. I'm trying to think of a typical 3D beat-em-up, though.
I can't believe there's actually a Wikipedia definition for this, but it is... hack and slash is just, like, it is a subset of, like, beat-em-up or brawlers, where there is a focus on using swords or weapons. That is one opinion.
I was like, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Where's going?
Dude, I'm like, okay.
It just emphasizes that the combat in the game involves, weapons. That's really all it is.
I will say this, in response to that.
Huh?
Did she cut out?
Oh, I'm waiting.
She did.
I'm waiting for now.
Oh, no. Go ahead, see, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
All just cut off that, Purnell. Just he doesn't.
How about no? Be better than them, Brooke. Be better. So
I will thank you.
I feel like even though I said that, I do feel like most of the times where that is that rule applies that Tim just read, they generally do seem to involve that same style of like fast frenetic motion, though. At least the ones that are like most described or discussed.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting random thing there, but
yeah.
So there's also a little bit of a distinction that I personally have between like a beat 'em up and a brawler.
Okay.
Which kind of goes a little old school, and maybe everybody doesn't agree. I don't know. But to me, a beat 'em up is specifically what they call in Japan a belt action game.
Mm-hmm.
So like Final Fight, where you're running across a single a scrolling screen and beating up people as you go, right? And then, you know, beating a boss up and all that stuff. Like a beat 'em up like takes place in levels through which you move in a belt fashion, because, you know, they wrap back around and stuff, or yep. You know, it's just one direction. I think a beat 'em up is a little bit more like Renegade, where a brawler includes things like Renegade, where you're just on one screen beating up enemies, and then you move on to the next stage, which is also just one screen, and things like that. So like that's always kind of been the distinction in my mind, is that a brawler can stand still, or it can like do other things besides moving across a screen.
Okay, I can see that. I was wondering. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying I like it. You said.
Yeah, because like a brawler tends to be like, it's more like it's a brawl where it's like a bunch of enemies get thrown at you, you know, whereas a beat 'em up is like you're a little bit more, aggressive, like you're the aggressor. Like Final Fight, most of those guys are just standing around until you walk in and then you just start beating the crap out of them.
I can see that. I was no reason, totally unrelated, but I was wondering what it meant if like a game was described as all three across different people, or even the game describing itself from different like platforms like Steam and the eShop. It really had me thinking this weekend, like, what are the difference between the three? I really like your distinction between brawler and beat 'em up, because when I was asking myself, like, what's the distinction? Is there any? Like, I could only kind of about how I felt in games I played. I couldn't come up with anything. One more question.
There mostly isn't one, though.
Yeah, exactly. It's like shooter. Shooter can mean a lot of things.
Yeah. It's best not to get too caught up on it.
Yeah,
I guess I was just trying to figure out how I wanted to describe something in a way that could actually like define it and set apart those other games. And just one more question for y'all, just out of curiosity, how you think about this. When you hear the term side-scroller for a game, Is it still a side scroller if you can go up and down through a level? Like, is Spelunky a side scroller because you're like, what do you call it?
You're
like,
going
you're mostly
down.
Going down.
You're descending. Yeah.
So is a that scroller. A side scroller to y'all? If you also go up and down,
I would say it's a vertical side scroller.
Yeah, that. But if someone did say side scroller in any capacity in that regard, I wouldn't dismiss it or anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
I think that part of it also is the view, because, you know, it's a side view.
Yeah.
Whereas, like,
good point. Yeah.
If it's a top down view, those tend to scroll vertically. So, like, you know, it's like kind of that thing. But, you know, yeah, it could be considered like a subset, like a vertically scrolling side view action platform or whatever. You know,
cool.
So.
Now that y'all did my homework for me, I'm ready to review a game.
Right, now I got to get Simon off my lap because he's demanding attention right now.
We all get by with a little help from our friends.
Yay. All right, we ready for reviews then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right, let's kick things off with Helvetti, developed by Team Qua Qua, published by Team Qua Qua and Red Art Games. Released February 3rd on Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. Helvetti is a character action game set in Gaelic Celtic mythology. Challenge ever-changing rot with three characters. Use the gifts and powers bestowed by primal deities to show your mastery of combat by pummeling, juggling, and slamming your enemies in a gorgeous 2D presentation. Brooke and Tim, you both want to talk about this one. Brooke, how about you start it off? What is Helvetti?
Well, I found it interesting that Depending on where I went to pretend to buy the game, I would get a different description, which is obviously that's what I'm asking you guys about in my question right before this. So I had a copy from the Nintendo eShop that Helvetii is a 2D brawler roguelite set in. And then it was after that, it was verbatim what you said. So that really, like, seeing the differences really gave me some food for thought. But yeah, like, concept wise, how am I going to put this? This is a war chief, a fox man, and a druid walk into a bar. Sorry.
Okay, or a forest, a cursed forest. They walk into a cursed forest.
Yeah. A violent, ever rotting world. Okay. You take it from here.
Yeah. This is a side scrolling hack and slash action adventure roguelite. It reminds me on some level of Vanillaware's Muramasa, which was backed up when my coworker took a look at it and was like, oh, that looks like Muramasa. And I was like, yeah, I kind of thought the same thing, but it's not like a sprawling that action adventure like that. As Brooke said, there's three different characters they give you. They'll drop you into these randomly laid out maps where you run around, and the art is real good. I'll say that your character looks really good. The backgrounds look really good. The enemies look really good. It's a really good looking game. And so you'll run around. The maps can sprawl in any direction in a Metroidvania ish, I guess, style, and that you could be going up or down or left or right from the starting point. And so you'll go onto a screen. You'll usually get jumped by some monsters. You will beat the shit out of them if all goes well, and then you'll collect some rewards, maybe just like a few coins or some health and mana restoration. But sometimes they drop a chest with more of that stuff in it, and sometimes there is a chest that gives you an item that will give you some kind of a passive bonus for your run. Like, it will make bleed effect stronger, or instead of throwing one axe, you will throw three axes. That one is pretty dope, by the way. I found out, though, it'll come at the cost of increased mana expenditure for throwing an axe. But when you're throwing three, I think it's worth it. And so you're trying to find the boss of the level, and once you beat the boss of the level, then the exit will appear on the boss's screen, and then you can move on to the next one. Or you can go back and finish exploring just in case you miss some nooks and crannies that might have items in them. Every stage has a shop in it manned by a little owl man named Bob, who will talk to you about stuff and mainly sell you things. So the flow of the game is you pick a character right off the rip. You will go through two stages in a particular tile set. You will fight some monsters, you will collect some money, you will buy some items that could, you know, that will enhance your character. You will find some items that will enhance your character. You can make pacts with deities, which at the cost of some health will give you some very strong attacks on your shoulder buttons that use a good amount of mana, but they are generally very worth it. And once you beat two stages in an area, you will pop back out to the map, at which point you can select one of the other characters, though in practice, I don't know why you would, because you're usually upgrading one character. Like, the upgrades you buy only apply to one character, so on a particular run, you're probably going to stick with one character. There doesn't seem to be much advantage of switching between them between levels, unless I'm missing something. And some of the items are particular to the characters, so it's like, I don't know why you'd want to switch, but the option's there.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too.
Maybe you would feel like the mage character will work better in the second level. I don't know. I usually just kind of rotate between them just to change things up and have fun. But each time you beat a boss, you get the persistent currency that lets you buy permanent upgrades. So that, you know, when you inevitably die, and you go back to the beginning, you can buy some enhancements that will, like, say your characters will all start with a key for opening treasure chests, or they'll start with more mana or more health or more money, stuff like that, that will make it a little bit easier every time you go through. But that's kind of the stuff that I feel is the weakest. is the roguelite element to it. Like the rate at which you accrue that currency and kind of the bonuses you buy don't always feel that significant. They definitely add up. And as you get better at the game, you definitely accrue it faster, but it's still like, ah, I'm buying to increase health for all my characters. I'm spending all this hard-earned currency to up my character's health by 15 points or to up like one character's agility by 1 point. It just doesn't, that doesn't feel good. In practice, I find that, you know, I'm getting better and making more progress in the game because I am getting better at, the aforementioned like ass beating, the beating the shit out of that aspect of the game, which I feel is very good. Fortunately for like the combat is kind of the star of the show here. And that you have each character has like a special ability, like your knight dude has a big heavy swing. The little fox man has a parry, which I think might actually be my favorite ability, even though I'm not usually a parry fan. The mage has a thing that like enhances your your damage. It's like a risk reward thing. It drains your magic faster, but it ups the damage you do, so you can just like wipe a screen really quickly if you're good about it. You know, you got basic combos, you're working in these special moves, you have a dash, you can knock enemies up in the air, do air combos out the wazoo. Each character has a like a throwing distance weapon, like the aforementioned axes or like knives or magic crap that they will shoot out. And, you know, I'm stringing together some combos that feel and look really good. Just hitting guys up in the air, hitting them about, dashing over, like hitting a parry, doing the specials in the middle, down stabs. It's cool. It feels good. And that's what keeps me on the treadmill, is just that the combat feels really good, more so than the, you know, grinding up my character through menial upgrades. How about you, Brooke? What'd you think?
I would agree with that. I find the combat to be super satisfying. I'm going to backtrack here. Rehash a couple of the things that you've talked about, but like I found the combat pretty satisfying. I was surprised by that because when I started the game, Tim, I don't know why I'm struggling with like words to describe how I feel about the game's concepts, but when I started the game, I was like, oh, this is one of those games that almost feels like it's got paper doll layovers and it feels very floaty.
Okay.
Like, I thought because of the way I was going around and the platform, like in the platformy way of how I would like land on things when I'm doing a high jump, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is super floating. But then the combat itself surprised me. I ended up not feeling that way overall about the gameplay. I ended up feeling like it was really crisp and really satisfying, even though at first glance, maybe because I'm less experienced with this type of game, I didn't expect it to feel so impactful. So I found like normally with roguelike games, I'm coming back for like the buffs and the long-term like status stuff like you're talking about. What did you call it? The pervasive currency that you get when you
defeat bosses.
Normally that's what, I don't know what to call it either, but whatever you had said was a really good way to put that because I don't have a good word for that. Little stuff like that is normally what keeps me coming back over and over again to a game like this or Spelunky. But I did find that to be kind of like, it felt intentional. It felt like they wanted to dole it out kind of slowly. And I felt like that was an interesting choice. Like, oh, did they try to make those more incremental to encourage lots of short runs where you die over and over again? And then maybe it's a game where you play 700 times and you beat the final boss on the 700th run, even though in theory you could play this game in like maybe an hour or two of a run. You could, in theory, beat the game, but I find that, I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like you're going to play this like probably a couple hundred times and die before you would beat a game like this.
I've made it to the last boss.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just me then.
Probably. I definitely kind of hit a bit of a hump. At a certain point, I was having trouble getting, I'm just making good progress in the third. But yeah, I made it to what I believe to be the last boss. I don't think the game is meant to be very long in terms of like the amount of stages it has. I think it has like, I mean, I could be wrong here again. I didn't finish it, but it certainly felt like the area I was in earlier today. Like, wow, this feels like a last area. And this guy I'm fighting feels like a last boss, but I could be way off. Yeah, I've put like 4 or 5 hours into the game at this point, so it's not, you know, nothing to sneeze at. I've done quite a few runs with each character. But I don't think it's meant to be like an exhaustively long one of these. So yeah, which could be good or bad depending on your point of view.
Yeah, now I'm wondering if that was an intentional choice to kind of slow roll us on the stuff that we earned that keeps us coming.
Yeah,
I
know.
I always get excited when I hear of a new roguelite game that's doing a platformer side scrolly thing, because I'm such a big like Spelunky fan, and I always assume it's just going to be like that.
No, it's not like that. This is definitely more violent.
yeah, I would say so, and that's when like I really started to ask myself, because it didn't feel quite like a hack and slash game to me, but then I was like, what does that even mean? I don't know. Sure. Going into the theme of the game, I didn't know this until I started looking into it, but I guess the Helvetii were real people. They occupied most of the Swiss plateau at the time of their contact with the Roman Republic in 1st century BC. Julius Caesar talked about them, and they failed migration attempt to southwestern Gaul and served as a catalyst for Caesar's conquest. So
are you going on Jeopardy later? You're going on Jeopardy later, aren't you? You're just practicing.
Yeah. Hold on, Joe. One thing, of course, I want to mention, and I should mention that, like, I did back this game on Kickstarter back in 2019. Is when I backed that sucker. Oh, and like many games on Kickstarter, it blew well past its projected release date, which is totally fine. Like, you know, he kept pumping out those updates. I wasn't even worried about it. I was like, it'll get here when it gets here, man. It's all good. And now it's here, and that's cool. But also, the music was done by none other than Dale North, usually in cases like this, when somebody I know, a friend of mine, has done the music, I just say that the music is shit and move on. And we all laugh about it because, of course, I'm lying. But goddamn, this might be Dale's best score to date. It is gorgeous. It is so good. I encourage you, when you get to a shop, just sit there and listen to that shop music.
It's really pretty.
I started thinking it was his best one when I was like going around, like really spending a lot of time in like the mountain area, which is like the third area, the ascent. And I was like, man, this is just really good. And like the boss music is gorgeous. And there's a vocalist whose name I don't remember. I think it's two E's.
Emmy Evans. I think so.
Okay.
Let me double check. Yes. Emmy Evans.
Oh, that would explain why I thought certain tracks sounded like they're from Nier, because she did vocals for Nier. that explains that one there.
That'll do it.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous soundtrack that I think complements the game very well. And yeah, it's real good.
Cool.
Well, I love the soundtrack. I thought it complemented the aesthetic of the style really well. One thing I want to say that I like about this game a lot, which I normally we take a little bit for granted, it did have such beautiful art and backgrounds. Some of the backgrounds are a little animated too, and amazing sound. But I think where the game is the prettiest is actually the combat system, because it's so smooth. There's so much happening at the same time, and everything just feels really smooth. And I feel like an idiot trying to describe it like this, but the game just works really well. Like, at no point in this game did I stop and say, did anybody play test this? Or like, it never breaks character. And I just felt like it was so refreshing to me, especially after a game I reviewed last week, which I gave a really great review with Aki, but it just didn't really work right. Over and over again, you're looking up and you're like, did they play test this? Did anybody look at this product? Like, everything was designed so well, but the pieces weren't put together. And I know that doesn't sound like such a huge compliment for this game, but it was just really beautifully done. It just felt like a really complete project. I don't know. And
saying a game actually works is a positive.
Sometimes you do have to praise a game for being finished.
I just have to say, like, I'm not gonna like point any fingers, and it never like is gonna break whether or not I think a game is a buy it. Like, look at last week's game, but this is probably in the last 10 games I reviewed, I think for the show, that I think this game works the best. Like, it really felt like the teams working on the game were only assigned what they could do in the time limit. Nothing felt like I don't know. I just found that super refreshing, and that made it feel like a complete labor of love. I don't know. Really impressed by that. And I thought the tutorial was bomb. I thought it was perfect tutorial. And you guys know every week I come in here and I'm like, I hated the tutorial. I couldn't learn. It was too hard. You can come back to the tutorial as much as you want. And it kills it. And it just
that is an upside. My funny thing is, like, I just jumped straight into the game and I was like, man, I can't believe they don't got a fucking tutorial for this. And then I was back at the main menu at some point and I was like, oh, there it is. It's on the main menu.
Well, what's great, this is the last thing I'll say, and I promise I'll shut up. What I love about the tutorial is it takes every single little concept in the game from the mini map that, like, kind of shows you how the game works and how each level is laid out, which is procedurally generated, so it's different every time. Like, everything, the tutorial really taught you every single little piece of the game, and it teaches you everything completely before it has you move on to the next piece. But if you already know a bunch of the game because you jumped in like Tim and you just want to play, and then you're like, oh wait, I don't totally understand how my move like completely powers up, or there's one little piece I'm missing, you can jump in the tutorial anytime you want from the menu. You can rush your way to whatever part you want to explore more and just hang out until you understand it. And I don't think any part of it's boring, and I don't think it misses anything. And if I want to come on here and say this is the most, like, clean, tight game I've played in the last 10 games I've reviewed for the show, this is the best tutorial in the last 20 games I've reviewed for it. Like, these are two really big things. And it just, like, I don't know, man. I just want to pat these guys in the back and give them a hug for both of those things. I think they're really great, especially when you do have such awesome art and really great music. Normally, I feel like we get one or the other. We either get a bunch of really pretty assets and they're not put together completely well, or we get the opposite side of that. And yeah, nailed it.
Cool. Well, we got to talk about price. The game is $15 on PC. It is $16.99 on Switch and PS4. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a buy it. I know Tim might not want to say because he kickstarted it. It's a buy it for me.
I bought it.
He already bought it. I think it's great. I really think, like, there aren't a lot of games I feel like offer this much content for under $20 and, like, roguelike procedurally generated, like, come back again and again, and it's slightly different each time. But get attached to the characters and, like, get attached to, like, inventory and skills a little bit. I think it's a great game.
Yeah, I think the shortcoming of this game is actually in the roguelite elements, and the strengths of it are in, like, literally everything else. And $15 is not a high price to pay these days.
And I noticed go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I did play it on the Steam Deck, which it gave me the prompt of, like, well, we're not sure if this will work, but, you know, it works totally fine. Like, the button prompts don't line up exactly. Like, they don't seem to have, like, a standardized, like, Xbox or Steam Deck button layout in there, but it's not like you can't figure it out. The buttons are 1, 2, 3, and 4. So, like, it's there's only so many buttons, and it all feels very natural, so I wasn't lost at all.
I didn't know you played it for Steam Deck. I played it for Switch, and I mean, like, I love my Switch, but if I want to talk about a game working exceptionally well and it happens to also be on Switch, like, that's notable for me too. That's all I'll say there. I feel Tim's complaint of, like, the roguelite parts being a little slow rolled. I definitely noticed that, and I wouldn't begrudge anybody having a complaint there. I didn't care, and that didn't deter from it for me. The only thing I didn't like about the game, just one tiny little thing, and this is more me bringing it up because I want to know what Tim thinks about it. The sound design and the actual fighting, I felt like I couldn't tell when my attacks landed or there wasn't a lot of, like, noise coming from the enemies to let me know when I've killed them. And that's, like, literally my only complaint personally with the game. Okay. Am I making that up? Like, what's going on with the sound design for the enemies, like, feedback?
No, I guess I was just, like, looking more for visual cues there. Like, if they get staggered so you can juggle them, or, you know, they just start to flash when they disappear, or there's numbers flying off them, so I know I'm hitting them. That's what I was looking at more than the sound. I don't know, I'll have to really pay attention next time I'm doing that.
Well, it's such a small little nitpicky thing. Yeah, yeah. I didn't even know if it was more in my head. But yeah, that's, like, personally, just for me, that's the only thing that I didn't like about the gameplay of it. I just thought it was great.
Cool, sounds like a winner.
Yeah.
All right, well, that is...
Ding, ding.
That is it for YouTube, Brooke and Tim. That is it. We will let you get going.
All right, cool. Yeah, I'm going to go.
All right. Night-night. Peace out, you guys.
So enjoy night-night and enjoy bun-bun.
Mm-hmm. I will. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
All right, but all right. Before I sign off, I have to start this fun new running segment of Has Chris Played It for his list of 100 whatever bucket list games.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the thing I'm doing.
Hey, have you actually played Metroid Prime?
No, barely.
You should play Metroid Prime.
It's on the list.
All right, cool. All right, that is the first installment of this ongoing running gag where I ask Chris, did you play this?
I like it. No, that's what I want. Yeah.
And more on Metroid Prime next week on the show. I never thought I would say that, but that is...
Yep. In an official capacity.
That's so cool.
Fucking crazy.
All right. Yep. Until next week. Good night.
Good night, y'all.
All right. Bye. Moving on. Next game to talk about is The Legend of Gwen, developed by WiiWii Games, published by Flynn's Arcade, released February 16th on the Switch for $19.99. Gwen had just arrived at the School of Sorcery. She wanted to become the best witch in the world. To her bad luck, she arrived at a bad time. Just when she arrived, she couldn't even have her welcome party because there was a surprise guest, the evil. Chris, who's the evil and what's going on in The Legend of Gwen?
Oh, hell. I don't know what the evil. So the game does this cute thing where before you start the first stage, you talk to one of the other witches in the hub world. And she's like, hey, do you want to know what happened? And then you like push, you know, you can't move past until you say yes. And then she drew you a picture and it shows you like a crayon drawing of like what happened. And, it's just like these two pictures of a bunch of witches getting kidnapped by something evil. And that's pretty much it. Yeah.
So what do you do in the game?
So the game is a fully free roaming 3D adventure that has you going into different levels that you access from the hub world, which kind of acts like a Super Mario map or something like that, right? And, you know, when you go into the level, your job, your main job is to collect the stars in the level, which usually number 5. I don't know. I haven't seen one that hasn't numbered 5 yet. So, and basically you just find the 5, you know, stars and then find the exit essentially, which is just like this, this star, I don't know what you would call it, like an altar, I guess. And if you can do this within the 3 lives or so that they give you, I think it might actually be 4 lives, then you get to move on. However, there are supplementary challenges. For the most part, if there are enemies in the stage, then you're tasked with killing a number of them. There's also like sometimes a hidden treasure in a stage, and you can get that too. And basically, yeah, the more stars that you collect, the more areas you can unlock and then access harder, you know, different harder levels. So, you know, that's just kind of that's the gameplay loop. And there's also gems that you can collect in each stage as well that help you towards purchasing things in the hub world that, you know, different magics or something. One of them is called a boss defeater. So I feel like that might be needed. And yeah, it's like it's basically presented in this kind of cartoony way, you know, 3D polygons, nice looking, you know, textures and stuff. Like I said, very cartoony, kind of chibi-ish. So that's the good of the game. It's got a good soundtrack. The levels can be, you know, like it's just like a bunch of blocks floating in space. Like literally the space underneath you is like this grid, and if you fall into it, then you know you have to start the stage over again, unless you have checkpoint magic, which I don't know what it does, but as I understand it might give you a checkpoint. And then yeah, and like I said, if you don't get all the stuff within a certain amount of lives and you have to start the stage over, it's not a real consequence. It's just, you know, you don't lose all your stars every time you die. And if you touch an enemy once or get zapped, then you also die. So, like, that's a thing to worry about. Because there are enemies that, like, literally shoot at you from quite a long distance away. So, there's certain parts where you really have to stay on your toes. So, yeah, it's, like, apart from that, it's fairly standard. It's cute. Gwen does a cute little dance when she finishes a level. I like that. It's kind of like the twist. but a little bit cuter. And yeah, that's that. So then we get to the part of the game that that I mostly want to talk about, which is the fact that it is slow. It is as slow as refrigerated honey.
Oh, God.
It is. You get into the hub world and the frame rate is just chugging. It's choppy. It, you know, like you move and it's like playing on an old computer where it's like trying to load in the next area and stuff. And it's just like you just can't catch up with it. It runs at like I want to say like about 15 to, you know, 12 to 15 frames a second. I'm going to say is about what we're looking at here. It is so slow. And that includes the levels. So the real challenge to this game is that it is very hard to do anything in it. Jumping, you know, you have a jump and a double jump. At one point, you actually also obtain a mid-air dash. So, like, those are all nice and such, but there's a couple of issues with that. One, the frame rate, of course. And so your character kind of overcorrects when you... when you are sitting there trying to get them to move in a direction, you end up overcorrecting and falling off. Or if, you know, the camera is not a free roaming camera either. The camera is going to be four positions. You know, it switches sides to the middle of basically like the four invisible walls, right? But your character can still move anywhere. So when it comes to platforming, that doesn't situate you into a straight line with the next platform. And we're talking like moving platforms, raising and lowering platforms, and stars in between. So you have to be able to move really precisely. The remedy for this in most 3D games is to give your character a shadow. Your character's shadow is only based on a certain light source that's off camera, so you don't have a shadow directly under you. You have a shadow that's kind of up and to the left of you, depending on, you know, where the camera is aiming. So you can't use your shadow as a marker when jumping. It only appears once you've just about landed, and again, it's not going to be center of where you are. So it's a game that has some cleverness to it, but it is very hindered by what I'm going to call glaring performance issues and just a couple of like blatantly overlooked essentials for this style of platformer. So yeah, it took me forever to get through the first stage, but once I started getting through stages and stuff, I was like, okay, this is cool. But yeah, just like every time I started a stage, I was like, ugh, this doesn't feel good.
Well, the game's $20. What do you think of it?
Don't go near this one for now. It did have an update between the time I downloaded it and when I, you know, got through the first stage. I don't know if it was an improvement patch at all, but it needs some more of those. This game needs to move at least twice as fast. And I don't care if they take out some textures to do it or something, because this game needs to be playable before I can recommend it. Other than that, I mean, there's good stuff in here. They needed to put it together better. It feels unfinished. So, gonna give it a deny it on that one.
Alrighty.
I appreciate that, because I was eyeballing that one. So, now I know to keep the money for a little bit and see. Hopefully they make the improvements you mentioned, though.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, sometimes I will load up it's always a 3D game, right? But, I'll load up a 3D game on Switch, and then as soon as it starts moving, my heart just goes, ugh.
Like, it's all it takes is that second. Like, what?
It's just that one second. I'm like, oh, it's like this, isn't it?
Well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next game is Labyrinth of Galleria, the Moon Society, developed by Nippon Ichi Software, published by NIS America, released February 14th on Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $49.99. On the outskirts of town lies a mansion said to house the entrance to a maze overflowing with treasure. Do you wish to discover the magical mysteries hidden inside? Purnell, tell us about the Labyrinth of Galleria.
Yeah, I've been waiting for this game's release for a couple years now, because it was out in Japan for a bit, and we finally managed to get it here. And spoiler for the review, it was worth the wait, because this game is freaking fantastic.
You know that that's supposed to go at the end, right?
I'm aware. Okay. I just wanted to exclaim it early, because I really like the game. It's so for those who don't know me, I'm a big fan of things like the games of dungeon crawler ethics or like RPGs in general. And despite the number of which I've played over the years, Labyrinth of Refrain's mechanics and gameplay made it one of my all-time favorite dungeon crawlers. And this one carries on that mantra in stride. The logic behind this is that you're kind of playing as a spirit, but the game revolves around a narrative featuring a young girl who shows up to Galeria Manor to take on a job where the job is not what she expected it to be. The job is of being to support the spirit that you control as it explores a labyrinth that consumes humans and won't let them leave if they try to enter it. So if a human enters this labyrinth and tries to leave, they will be brutally murdered by magic objects. So you can't do it. So the way that they get around this is by sending you, the Lantern Phantasmagoria, into the labyrinth to explore it as a non-living entity, which is why you're not beholden to the curse. But the lantern, however, cannot fight. Instead, combat is handled by way of puppets brought to life. The characters in this game that you actually battle with are actually wooden puppets given souls, and they take on a variety of different characteristics and traits. So think of the characteristics as general like character classes in an RPG, like the tank, or the agile archer, or the theater trope character, or whatever. And they all come with their own respective stats and the like. But then you can kind of customize them a little bit more. You can give them different appearances. You start out with a few for each type of class, the gender for those classes, and then you unlock more appearances and voices and stuff as you play through the game too. So, which is good though, because you can have up to about 40 puppets in your actual party, 15 of which will be front facing and the rest will be reserve. That's a mechanic I might describe in a few minutes. But you'll pretty much give them different appearances, voices. You'll determine the rate at which their stats will grow. And then from there, you'll just kind of put them in a party and go nuts. But unlike a typical game of this nature, where you put party members in the line and they fight, instead, you have to put the party members in what's called a coven, a witch's coven at that. There's a variety of these things that you can discover in the game. And the coven system is probably one of the cooler things I've come across in this style of game as well. Because think of a coven as like a cluster of party members. But depending on where you put the party member in the cluster determines the overall strength of one or more characters in said coven. For example, there might be a reserve slot that says if you put a character here, magic spells used by this coven will be reduced in cost by 80%, which means you bet your ass you're going to put a character there. Or it might be one that says if you put a character here, his attack power will be attributed to one of the lead members of the coven. And there's all kinds of stuff like that. Sometimes you can't use certain spells or abilities unless a person slotted in a very specific spot within the coven. And you'll do this for 5 different slots, and each of those slots has a different number of party members that it can hold. So you'll be mixing and matching all those guys, and each of these party members has to get equipped with stuff. It might sound like it's overwhelming right off the gate because, yeah, ultimately you will be equipping a lot of puppets with a lot of stuff. But you can, at least generally, if you play on the ordinary world difficulty, you can generally just kind of get away with like giving your main fighters the good stuff and giving the reserve puppet members maybe equipment specifically tied to how they benefit the front fighters or something like that. So you can get away with certain stuff like that. That's pretty much how the general idea of building a party goes. And then combat is you commanding the coven as a whole or spending points in something called reinforcement points to tell the individual puppets what to do if you need to do that. Because as a whole, a coven can't do things like use items, right? But if you do the reinforcement, you can do specific actions that only individual puppets can do. So you'll have to do that sometimes to be strategic. God, there's a lot to describe about this game that I'm not going to go too much into because we don't have that kind of time. But combat is very, you know, it feels lame at first because you'll kind of start out and it's just like auto attack, because you don't have a lot of different mechanics at your disposal. But as you get more covens, as you get more puppets, as you get more Dunham abilities, which is how magic is referred to in this game, and so on and so forth, you will expand your repertoire immensely to the point where you will start being strategic, especially as enemies start becoming a bit of assholes. Battle is one thing, but the thing that makes this stand out more than anything from other dungeon crawlers is the actual dungeon exploration itself, because you move around in like a, you know, grid system, so one spot at a time. Enemies don't move unless you move. And if it was as simple as that, well, it would be just like any old dungeon crawl, which wouldn't be a problem. It would just not particularly stand out. But what does change mechanics in this game is that you start getting abilities fairly early on that just gets more and more grand as you get further in. That allows you to do things on the map to, I guess, alter or enhance your exploration. For example, you start getting the ability to just outright destroy walls, which means now, in most dungeon crawlers, a wall is a thing that you can't avoid. If you see a wall, you got to go around it. In this game, most walls, if you see, you can just smash it open and go right through it. Which does lead into some interesting maze designs, too, because sometimes you'll smash into a hidden room, sometimes you'll smash in and make yourself a nice shortcut to a new room, but other times you'll find, like, abysses that you can fall into and outright just kill your entire party if you're not being careful. There's a lot of cool stuff like that. There's, like, new exploration abilities, like, you know, long jumps and the ability to dive underwater and have to manage oxygen as you move through the maze, you know, underwater settings. It's just tons of fun to explore these maps and figure out what the hell's going on and solve what the game wants you to ultimately solve to get to the next floor of whatever section of the labyrinth you are in. As you're exploring the maze, also, you'll come across like mana deposits, which you need to use at the home base to unlock new abilities for your character. Like I mentioned, the wall smashing and like fog veils and stuff like that. You'll need to spend it for things like that. But if you are uncareful and you manage to die before you come back up, you will lose all of that you've acquired while exploring the labyrinth, which would suck. So be smart, be wise, escape as possible. The game's general progression sense involves the narrative playing out on the surface between Eureka and her various witch companions and the Lord of the Manor, whose name eludes me because he's just a dick. I don't want to like him, and I don't, so his name doesn't matter to me. But you'll have narrative experiences with these guys, in which case you'll learn about the world and what you're ultimately experiencing. And the story does go some interesting places, in the sense that, like, it seems lighthearted at first, but don't be surprised if it takes a shift towards the dark, because... Yeah, think of it as like sort of like a weird Grimm's fairy tale sort of vibe, because that's what they go for, I personally believe. But after that, you might get a general task like, hey, while you're down there, I need you to explore this level of the dungeon, go this far down, or you found a mysterious man down there, go see what the hell he's doing. So now that's your general goal for the lantern and the puppet soldiers. Explore further out, do what's needed to be done, and once you've resolved that issue, you come back up to the surface to get your next bit of narrative exploitation. That's not what I want to say.
Exposition.
Yes. Thank you. I need to go to fucking sleep. but yes, and that's generally the loop for the game. Some people might like the narrative. Some people might not. I personally think the narrative is just nice and fine. I'm good with it. But even if you find yourself being like, yeah, I'm not really digging the story, the gameplay makes up for it tenfold. It's just fun to explore the dungeon. It's fun to have these cool large puppet parties. It's cool to just enjoy the game. And they even brought back things like the stockpile system, which allows you to, like, go into a battle, win, and rather than get your experience and mana from the battle, you can say, no, I'm going to stockpile this mess, which allows you to double down and get more in bulk until you eventually claim it. You get more overall by stockpiling it instead of just claiming it bet after battle. The downside, though, is while you're stockpiling, you can't change your party members out. You can't use after party or after battle healing effects that you might have unlocked. You're pretty much going at it like, I'm a badass who can take on all the enemies in this dungeon. So if you find yourself in a situation where you got to run, well, you're going to lose your stockpile, all of it. If you find yourself in a situation where you get killed, you lose all of it. So you're playing a game of chicken with your experience points and your mana, but it's so fun to see it happen, especially when you're like kind of like threading the needle, like, yeah, this guy's hard, but I can take him out. These guys are tough, but just enough. And then you see like a freaking like black orb with like a purple ring around. I was like, yep, he's a badass. Stay the fuck away from that. but yes, I know we're not big for like lengthy reviews on that since, and I've been talking long enough.
Oh, we're not big for lengthy reviews when we did a 25-minute review earlier
of
friggin' Helvetti.
That's right. Hey, normally I'm the guy that's getting shut down. I got to keep this thing succinct. But suffice it to say, I love this game. I love Labyrinth of Refrain. I love Labyrinth of Galleria. I bought Labyrinth of Galleria and still wanted to get a review copy because I wanted to talk about it on the show. It's a game that I feel if you're a dungeon crawler player, especially now that this game is actually on like multiple systems. Because I think Labyrinth of Refrain was only on the Switch and it didn't even get a large print. Whereas this game is on, I want to say, PlayStation and Switch.
Yep.
And I PC. Think Steam, too. So get this damn game.
Everything but Xbox. Womp, so, womp.
Funny That's- thing is, I did buy this last week while Joe was asking me if there were any other NIS games I was looking at. And I was like, yeah, I'd like, you know, maybe this one. But then I was like, oh, this one's out. I'm actually going to just buy this. Bought the special edition. Turns out Catherine had already ordered the special edition, so we got two special editions here in the house.
Did you get for the same console, or did you split it between like two?
Same console.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, hold on to it. One of them might be worth a good chunk of change at some point.
Yeah,
if Labyrinth of Refrain is any indication. So,
well, is it worth money? Because like when I bought it, it was on clearance.
It's been a while, but last I remember like the collector's edition being worth a little bit online.
Oh, okay. I only bought the standard edition. They were like clearing it out for like $15 on one of the Black Fridays or around the holidays a couple of years ago.
Man, I wish I caught that shit because I would have totally paid $15 for it. I had a digital version, but I want a physical mode too. So,
yeah.
But yeah, buy this game. It's fun. It's good. If you like dungeon crawlers, it deserves a slot on your shelf.
Labyrinth of Refrain, $85.
Wow. That's regular?
For standard edition.
Funny.
Yep. Collector's edition, weird. $305.
I mean, that's dungeon crawlers for you, though. I mean, have you seen how much Etrian Odyssey games are going for now?
No. It's,
Etrian Odyssey 3 complete in a box is like $300 now.
Holy shit. I mean, it is one of the best ones, in my opinion. That was the one that used dual classing. But
it's one of the most fantastic dungeon crawlers ever. Yeah,
it'll probably come down now with this new version coming out, but we'll see.
Maybe, I hope so. I mean, I have one, so I don't really care. But like, same thing with the Dark Spire.
Yeah, that's
so. Anyway, Labyrinth of Galleria is $50. What do you say?
Oh, we already know my verdict. Buy the hell out of it. It's worth it. Buy it.
I also say buy it, even though I haven't played it yet.
All right. Well, moving on. Next game.
Just to have it and sell it later or something. I don't know. Whatever.
Just buy more of them and build a fort out of them. Next
build your own Labyrinth of Galleria.
The Labyrinth of Galleria. Next game is Mystic Gate, developed and published by Zoo Corporation, released February 9th on Steam for $9.99. One day, a gate created by the gods suddenly appeared in the human world. Adventurers challenge the ordeal that awaits them beyond the gate in order to make their wishes come true. A roguelike dungeon exploration shooting game. Chris, what is Mystic Gate?
Okay, so Mystic Gate, this is, funny enough, from the people who have brought us all those Pretty Girls games. And this game, as far as I can tell, does not have any pretty girls in it. This is actually a roguelike twin stick shooter dungeon crawler. So you play a guy. I don't know what the story is. You talk to somebody who tells you about the gate that's right in front of you when you start in the hub world. And you know, of course, the hub world is where you can purchase stuff with things that you collect in the dungeon upon dying, because it's kind of roguelite in that sense. But when you talk to the guy, this game has that annoying feature where it types out text at you, right? But if you push the button, it just skips that block of text.
So
you can't make it finish the text. I'm like, what? It's been a while since I've seen something that silly.
Infuriates me in a game. I want to hit the A button to read all the text, not skip it.
Yeah, I read faster than you can type, my friend. But now I can't read it at all because you only say this thing once and then move out of the way, and then you never get that dialogue again because that character is permanently to the side of the gate. So you'd have to like completely restart the game. Because it basically, when you say continue game, there's no like data or anything like that. You just you start the game over because it's a roguelike, but you always you always build upon your gem collection and your permanent upgrades collection. So anyways, so who knows what the story is or what that guy was saying. I skipped all of it accidentally and then on purpose. And then you go into the dungeon and you start off with a little old pistola and a floating robot buddy whose function I don't yet know. I don't know what he does, but he does follow you around, and I consider him moral support. It's kind of like having a fairy following you and stuff. You start off with a pistol. You can shoot enemies as they appear as you explore these dungeons. You can also break pots. You can find treasure chests with larger guns in them. All guns in this game have infinite ammo. There's a period of cooldown that you have to wait in order to use your gun again. So like a shotgun, it has like, you know, an ammo bar essentially. So like your pistol, like, you know, a shot will take away like 1/5 of the ammo bar, but it can be done really quickly and it recharges really quickly. A shotgun, you know, one shot empties the ammo bar and then you just, you know, wait a second and it comes back. So you can shoot like once a second. Pretty cool. Pretty slick system. Like I said, you collect your guns, you collect your treasure, you collect gems. The gems are permanent. They will stay with you until, you know, even after you die. The guns will not, the, you know, experience, quote unquote, will not, and your progress will not. But that's actually not too bad. And like I said, you can also collect power-ups that are considered just for that playthrough. So you can like raise your speed, you can raise your power. You have like 3 to choose from usually when you get to the end of like a floor or something like that. You also have a boss, and the bosses are randomly drawn from a pool. The bosses are pretty cool. Like, you know, it's very Zelda-like. You fight the boss in its own dedicated screen. It usually has some kind of thing you have to dodge, and then, you know, just attack patterns and stuff. One of them was a chameleon dragon, and it really ate me alive, but there was like a plant lady type thing, and I defeated her. And no, she wasn't pretty. She was just a plant. Anyways, once you get to the level, you know, the enemies get a little harder, more numerous, puzzles get worse, you know, it goes like that. And then, like I said, once you've collected enough gems in the hub world, you can then purchase unlockable bonuses to your character that will stay with you for the rest of the game. So there is an incentive to collect and to keep going back into that dungeon. And then, yeah, like I said, you also get a dash, and the dash makes you temporarily invincible. So, you know, a Dark Souls dash, essentially. And that really comes in handy for bosses and stuff like that, too. Like, Chameleon Dragon has a laser breath that you have to dash through. Otherwise, it'll take away one of your little Zelda hearts. Speaking of Zelda, the game is very, it's got that modern pixelated design. It's very, you know, kind of 16-bit, but unlike anything that we saw back in the day. It just looks like modern retro pixel art. And it's actually, the music in it's good, the graphics in it are good, and it's just got this nice little tight gameplay loop that keeps you coming back for more. It reminded me a little bit, especially because it has in-dungeon shops, it reminded me a little bit of Quest of Dungeons, which is like my favorite roguelike, so.
I love Quest of Dungeons.
Yeah. This one isn't as silly, but it is. It's fun, like the other one is.
Nice. Well, it's $10. What do you say?
Yeah, this one's actually a buy it. A lot of things. I was surprised at the quality of it, and like I said, it doesn't demand too much learning. Like I said, you can totally skip the story and just get to dungeon crawling, like I did, and you'll enjoy this, I think.
Cool. And the Steam page has 4 uses of unique. Where you can collect Excellent. Unique loot as you better your odds of surviving on each playthrough. There are procedurally generated dungeons with changing dungeon layouts, randomly positioned enemies, and loot. Players get a unique and intense experience. It's never the same twice. And then there's unique weapons with randomized unique weapons that appear in different places through your run through. Feeling lucky? Well, sounds like a good one to check out. So $10.
I give it 4 uniques out of 5.
Nice. I'm just going to wait for chat to catch up on all those uniques. Next game is Inculinati, developed by Yaza Games, published by Daedalic Entertainment, released January 31st on Xbox One, Series X and S via Game Preview, PC via Steam Early Access and GOG Early Access for $24.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass for console and Windows 10. Inculinati is an ink-based strategy game straight from the medieval manuscripts where a rabbit's bum can be deadlier than a dog's sword. What? Take your turn in Inculinati duels filled with unexpected tactical depth and humor. Embark on an ever-changing journey, build your own bestiary, defeat medieval superstars, and collect perks to unleash super special powers. Pernell, tell us about your time in Inculinati.
So Inculinati, and that's how you pronounce it. Okay, good. I've been struggling with that damn word. It's a very interesting game, both in execution and in style. The idea is that this is a side-scrolling, though not really side-scrolling, because I guess it's... Yes, I'll go with that. It's a side-scrolling of sorts strategy game in which you control a member, said Inculinati, artists who are capable of drawing magical characters and creatures that then do battle on book pages. The idea here is that on a general map, you will expend a resource known as living ink to draw various types of character units on the map. And depending on the type of level you're playing, you'll be tasked with either defeating all of the monsters on the board or defeating opposing Inculinati. Because even though you are personally drawing them on the table, during Inculinati battles, there is a tiny representation of you also on the map that is doing battle alongside the things that which they are being drawn. Now, the characters you can summon come in a variety of different types. Like they come in like forms of animals, creatures, what have you. And I never quite got a general sense of like if there's like a logic behind the different types of like characters. Say, for example, like you'll have dogs that can wield bows, swords, and spears, but you'll also have rabbits that can do the same thing. And if you go to their description to telling you what their skills and attacks are, I started to feel like certain like animals or creature types would have a common skill in their repertoire in addition to the things that were related to the type of weapon they use. But I kept coming across the occasional thing that would break that rule. But let's just say each unit has a multitude of different things they can do, whether it's their normal attack, their like special attack, and their like crowd control attack of sorts. And you don't have much of it. It's no resource that's required to use these abilities, mind you. As long as you have the turn, you can do the thing. And so, for example, if you want to use a skill that lets you heal, you can just use a heal. And that's fine. But the funny thing about that is, depending on how far you move the unit on a stance, because you can do a move action and then the actual action. Depending on how far you move them, they might not be able to actually act on that turn. So you have to be smart about how far you move units and things of that nature. But the game itself does some weird things in regards to movement that has you reconsidering necessarily just rushing in and stabbing enemies to death or defeating your fellow Inculinati. Because even though one of the main win conditions on a map is to defeat the Inculinati character, those actual units have special functions that no other character has because they themselves are the artists manipulating the board. So, for example, the artist can use their finger to just slide a unit as far across the board as possible until it gets to an empty spot. You might be saying, well, that doesn't sound such a big deal. Well, it is because one of the ways a unit can die is by being pushed off the page. So if you're in a situation where an enemy or if your enemy's in a situation where like they're coming up on you and they made it so that they're just kind of like facing an area where there's like nothing between them and the cliff, you can just push them off and boom, they're dead. These hand actions have a cooldown, but still, it's pretty dangerous to get near Inculinized unless you have a plan. You can also just kind of do multiple things, but the starting things are like you can poke a guy, just take damage from them. You can revive characters. You can do a number of different things with these characters. And I actually like that a lot, the fact that that main unit has those special functions that kind of fit the theme of you're an artist, you're just scrolling around with the page. It reminds me a bit of like Comic Zone from back on the Genesis. So you have that aspect of what they do. They also are the characters that will summon new units on the board, and the currency with which you use to summon new characters is that living ink. On each round, the way you get more living ink to summon things is by coming across ink blots that are on the map. You make one of you to stand on top of it and end their turn there. You'll draw the ink from the ground and put it into your ink well, which allows you to do more actions and summon more things. Now, if an enemy unit gets killed on the map, they also become more living ink, which can then be salvaged to make new things. Both you and the other Inkulinati unit on the board will be trying to do the same thing, so it becomes a race to steal the ink before the other characters do. There's tons of manipulable objects on the maps that can show up at times, whether you summon them yourself using a hand action, or if they already exist. Things like chests of drawers, which can delay or prevent objects from hitting you, or like exploding barrels, or just normal barrels. There's always something that's kind of there, just kind of being a jerk to kind of prohibit your progress. In between battles, you'll be going between nodes a la Slay the Spire or One Step from Eden or what have you, in which case, depending on where you go, you'll either have to deal with a battle of the two types I mentioned, or you'll come across random events where you can, say, for example, purchase items, purchase permanent upgrades to your living inkwell or your health pool. And if you do these things, you'll just kind of move forward and move on. But at the same time, there's one more resource that you kind of acquire throughout the game, which is prestige. Prestige can be earned from winning battles and also from some events. And that prestige can allow you to change or select different options during these event sequences that you might not have been able to select before. And some of them are pretty freaking funny. Like, you might come across a store where the guy's like, hey, you want to buy my wares? And if you have enough prestige, you're going to say, psh, like, I trust you. I'm not going to give you a dime of money. Give me something. And the guy will just give you an item, or else you'll threaten to, like, kind of, you know, badmouth his business. Something weird like that. So you'll be doing events like that. And if you lose a battle, rather than just die like you do in a lot of games of this nature, you actually just lose a life that comes in the form of quills. You get multiple tries based on the number of quills you've acquired. And once you've run out of quills, your game is over. But in the event that you don't run out of quills, you can get to the end of the game. And the general point of the game is that you are an Inkulinati master, or a person who studied under a master. And while partying with Death, your Inkulinati master is accidentally murdered by him. And you have to go on a quest that Death sets you up with in the hopes of him reviving your master and bringing him back from the dead. It's, again, weird and funny in that sense. Overall, though, after you do these situations, the thing you take on earlier, the thing I mentioned, the prestige, you can use that to purchase new types of units and new types of hand actions that can show up in future runs, hence the rogue-like element that this game has. More prestige across runs allows you to get more objects, which can be shown up in future runs, to just kind of expand on that experience as you play through the game. All in all, this game, I feel like the only thing that outright killed me, and that's a small gripe because it's just the kind of person I am, is that the music was kind of put you to sleepish, because the gameplay itself isn't speedy. It's very methodical. Like, I'm going to take this guy, I'm going to move him here. And they use humor to kind of, you know, add to this. Like, the different units make funny sounds. The thing mentioned earlier in your, when you made a description about the rabbit's farts, the rabbits have a move where they kind of fart on the character and kind of take health from them and confuse them. But it can be blocked by a dresser. I'm not making that up. But pretty much, this game, the music just kind of would put me to sleep sometimes, so I'd have to play some other music on the side. But the music is thematic for the concept. And one thing I should mention before I stop rambling is the fact that they did this weird extra thing, which I genuinely appreciate, where they added actual, like, live acting in certain scenes that I don't see happen in a lot of games these days. It's a rarity. But it's just a nice touch that, like, it reminds me of, like, Sega CD days and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I feel like this game is fun, and it's in early access, which makes me think or hope that they're going to add more content to the game. Maybe new units, new hand actions, maybe new events on the map. But all in all, also maybe a multiplayer mode if this game doesn't have one, because I didn't notice one on the status screen or anything like that. But
yeah, they say one of the top priorities in early access is to add online multiplayer.
Yeah, this game would sing in multiplayer, absolutely sing. Especially because, again, it's got a fun strategic element to it. Also worth noting about the strategic element that I like is that a lot of games like this, especially if it was like Lingyear in style, if you can't move past a unit until you kill it. This game, if you leave an opening, like a spot that they can stop on, units can just walk right past you and stab you in the back. So you got to watch your tookus. No putzing around, assuming that you have like a wall up or something. So yeah, I do like this game a fair bit. Some people might feel like, what is the price now?
25.
Some people might feel $25 is a bit for early access, but my take on this is that they already intend to bank on and add more stuff. The core gameplay is solid here. So you're basically paying for an investment to more content. But I feel like what they already give you is a fair bit. It's going to be a while before you unlock all the different stuff that they put in the game. So the only thing that becomes an issue is whether or not you feel like you'll get bored of the loop. And that's what breaks in playing other games are for. Come back to it when you feel like you want to play more of it. I think the game is good.
That's what playing other video games are for.
It's literally the truth, though. You don't have to just play the one game for 2 weeks straight. You can play you multiple games and come back. I literally never do.
I did with Chained Echoes, that's for sure.
What is your official verdict at 25? Is this something we should be keeping an eye on? Is this something we should invest in now?
I honestly feel like if money's not really an issue to you, I think it's worth buying right now because the game is fun. If you do feel like you need to be value conscious, I could see more towards the try it side or wait and see for like a sale or see what they add more to it before you jump on. Like maybe when that 2-player versus mechanic is added, maybe plunge onto it then. But
or check it out on Game Pass because it's on there.
Well, there you go. Game Pass makes it work.
Yeah.
Game Pass makes the dream work. I was going to try to do the teamwork thing, but you know.
Yeah. Anyway, one final game to talk about tonight, and we are going to After Dark territory. Norg, take it away.
I just hear
shuffle. After Dark.
Yeah, just my chair creaking as the sound file plays. SML After Dark territory with Shuttlecock H, developed by Inlet Pipe Productions, published by East Asia Soft, released February 9th on the Switch for $7.99. The only thing worse than entering a bullet hell shootout deep in space is not having the ability to shoot back, right? And Shuttlecock H, that's all part of the fun. Pilot your unarmed shuttle with absolute accuracy, and the three female companions you encounter will be sure to make it worth your trouble. Bow chicken bow wow. Chris, what is going on in Shuttlecock H?
Okay, so this game, which I requested thanks to my friend Tanya, who was like, this looks like it's what were her words? She said it looks like Undertale but good.
Oh Jesus.
I know. So Shuttlecock H has you playing through levels, as a shuttle, not actually a ship, and it's on a single screen kind of dodge 'em up as far as it goes. This, you know, there's very few shooters that are like this, because you know, usually you are the one actually shooting and not just dodging. But like R-Rootage is an example, at least the classic R-Rootage, of like, yeah, basically it's a it's dodging bullets. So the way it goes is that there's three scenarios, you know, very Brazzers type scenarios where, you know, you're meeting a college student or a nurse or whoever this third person is, because her levels are locked away under a whole bunch of points. And, you know, you basically play through stages and they give you like kind of awkwardly worded dialogue. And, you know, after every level, they have less clothes on until they have no clothes. And then the... Yeah, and then the final stage has them bouncing in a way that you know, makes you think that you're, you know, the invisible man right in front of the camera is getting some. However, this is the Switch, so some stuff is left up to the imagination. There are nipples, but, you know, that's about as much as you get to see. Like, the, you know, there's various ports of entry that are covered up by like cartoon rabbits and whatnot. So it is a censored game.
Ports of entry.
Anyway. So
that one broke me. Okay.
So yeah, in every stage you are, like I said, playing this as the shuttle, and you know, stuff appears on screen that you have to dodge. Now, you know, and they scale up in difficulty, of course. There's things that can shoot you. There are things that we'll put a pattern of bullets across the screen. There are actual, like, physical objects to dodge that are kind of bouncing back and forth. The game gets real hard, real fast. You know what I mean. But no, what I really mean is you're going to work very hard for these naked boobs. You're going to work so much harder than you think you're going to work. I, as a person who fancies himself a pretty good shmupper, it took me a very long time to get through the first, like, few stages. And, like, I only just today got past the first stage of the second lady's scenario. I got all the way to the end for the first lady. And I haven't even seen this third lady yet, so, because her... Again, you get points. You're supposed to, as you're dodging, collect points that come up onto the screen. You have a little bit of what's called a boost, which if you hold down any button, including the left trigger, so yes, it's a one-handed game. God knows how you would be able to manage the other hand, but in this, you know, in a shooter like this. But you have a boost that's like a temporary boost that will not only make you move slightly faster, and I do mean slightly, but it will also bring the power-up heart things closer to you. So it, like, kind of gives you a magnetic effect. So that kind of helps in collecting these things. So, like, with these games, I usually am like, you know, well, it's good if you like that sort of thing. But honestly, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is actually a technically excellent training type game for playing, like, more conventional shoot 'em ups, because the bullet patterns that they throw at you it's a lot of the classics, and it's a lot of stuff that if you're going for, like, for, you know, more bullet hell type games, like, this is stuff that you kind of have to learn anyway. So it's like, it's actually really good in that sense. However, like I said, if you're getting into this to look at, like, you know, the pictures of naked cartoon ladies, then that's where you're going to be a little frustrated, because you will have to display some skills for sure. There's, like, no getting around it, really.
You got to earn these boobies.
You're going to earn every bit of them. So that's basically it. I mean, you know, like I said, it's, you know, the writing is either goofy on purpose, or somebody just, you know, translated it from something else. Like I said, the nudity is censored when it gets into, you know, like I said, you know, more
the big
explicit
stuff.
Territory. Yeah, that stuff is covered up. So probably not on the Steam release. I'm willing to bet it's just
I was looking at the Steam version. There is censorship in the Steam version, but there's also a cheat code to get rid of it on the Steam version. I don't believe that's in the Switch, though.
It probably isn't, because I know that Nintendo's tightened down on that type of stuff. So, you know, if it's there, it's not going to be by the time you get around to it. So there you go.
Well, this one's $8. What do you say?
Honestly, it's a worthwhile game. You know, and it's not one of those things, like, Caladrius Blaze is, like, one of my favorite, like, sexy quote-unquote shooters. It's the one where you, like, oh, it's so good. It's such a great game. But it has, like, that, you know, shooting the clothes off of your opponent's mechanic.
Yeah, what's it called? Shame break?
Yeah. And but the thing is that the game itself is so good that you can turn that side of it off so that you can play it in public or in front of your mom or something without having to, you know, be like, don't look. And even though that game didn't have nudity at all, it had a way to, like, only access the gameplay. This doesn't have that, but honestly, I kind of wish it did, because I would play this more if I wasn't, like, you know, being like, oh, don't look at what I'm doing, guys. Or, you know, playing it on my other profiles or something, which I didn't, by the way. This is all on my main profile. So if you're friends with me on Switch, you're like, this guy plays a lot of shuttlecock. Anyways. So thanks to my friend Tanya for recommending this one. I'm not going to go as far as to say it's like Undertale, but good. However, I will say that you're going to get the same kind of, like, you know, dodging but not fighting back kind of experience there, but in a sexier way.
Cool
like
beans.
Said, I only just now clicked, like, oh, that's why she said it's like Undertale, because specifically the battle mechanic.
Yes, the battle mechanic of Undertales is that you dodge bullets, but you can't fight back. You can't shoot back. Yeah, you can fight back. You have to do, like, the golf mechanic in order to fight back, but then you're a monster and everybody on the internet hates you, and Toby Fox like gets mad at you at the end of the game and like fucks up your save data and everything. So never
wait,
play
does that
golf.
Really happen?
Yeah, it permanently changes like your save, your entire game, to where you can never get the good ending quite like it was ever again if you play the bad ending.
Wow.
So get the bad ending, get the good ending first.
And then if you load up the game after the good ending, they literally ask you not to play the game anymore, which is actually why I only played it once. I was like, enough. They ask you, the intro of the game asks you not to put everybody back into a bad situation because you know you made things right for them. So if you put them back in the bad situation, it's your fault, but nobody's going to blame you because we'll all not remember. You know, it's like it's this meta thing. And I was like, oh, fuck you. I've got 1,000 other video games to play that actually want me to play.
Another thing about that, this is just a little bit side tangent, but related, is the whole thing, that big Sans fight that I saw on the internet, which I thought was really cool looking, by the way.
Yeah,
you can only get that by doing that.
Yes. The only way to avoid having your save file permanently altered by Toby Fox is to turn the game off immediately after winning that hard-earned fight, and don't look at the ending. that's all you can do. The other thing is that you can go into the save file itself, assuming that it's not a console version, and remove some code or whatever. I've heard that's the thing too. Otherwise, yeah, there's a little bit at the end of even the best ending that implies that you actually are still evil and that you're going to kill everybody again, no matter how good you do.
Now I have no reason to play the game. So,
yeah, sorry.
I want to play it more. No, I want to play it more now. Cause I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
SML After Dark Undertale Spoiler Edition. And the other thing is that if you try to stream it, then the entire internet will come down on you for trying to get the bad ending. Like that. They literally bullied like some bigger streamers from like actually finishing the game because of.
Because he was going for the bad ending?
Just because he was just going for whatever ending. And they were just, like, so aggressive in their backseating that it, like, caused these people to, like, just quit the game.
Oh, backseating as in, like, they were trying to tell him what to do. And he's like, I just want to enjoy the game. He's like,
and,
no, you
and just
can't
saying,
do that.
Yeah, exactly. You can't. You're not doing it right.
Enjoy the privacy of your own home. That is. So there you go. It is SML After Dark because you're only meant to enjoy this game in the privacy of your own home. But no
yeah,
one's
exactly.
Looking.
Well, you know, I don't know if you can stream Shuttlecock either, so that like, maybe it is similar to Undertale in that way, that you probably don't want to stream it.
There it is.
All right, well, music for this episode. We're going to wrap things up. Show's over. What should we play music-wise?
Have some Undertale.
I don't know what Undertale I have.
I don't know either.
Just look up a Megalomania remix and you're in, and there you go. Just something Megalomania in a cover, and you're good.
I don't want to say something Megalomania, because I might not find something for Megalovania. So we'll just play something from Undertale. There you go. We'll play something. I'll figure it out. I don't know.
Oh, there's a million covers out there.
That's why I was thinking, like, if you're looking, you'll find something from Megalomania.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't want to have to download anything. I just want something off my computer.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm lazy.
I'm trying to think of who I know that's covered it. I mean, the Returners have, but they didn't record it.
I know Overclocked University did.
Yeah, that's got to be that. It. Yeah, do that.
I don't know. We'll do something. I'll see what I have.
Overclocked University, that's Steve-O, right?
Yeah.
See, he would be perfect because he's got a very After Dark personality because he does the...
Oh, yeah, the porn stuff.
The porn fan fiction stuff.
Yeah.
I misheard that. Did you say Steve-O? Like the guy that used to be on freaking Jackass?
No, Steve-O Bortz.
Okay.
Yeah,
Level 99.
I don't know. Yeah, level 99 is his nom de plume. Nom de internet.
And one more thing. Like I didn't know, but the whole thing about how that Megalovania was based off of the track from Live Alive.
Yeah. It kind of is. I mean, they're very different songs, but I guess he kind of got that brassy, dancey type feel. But you know, yeah, I love. Actually, I love both songs. I mean, nothing against Undertale's music; it's all very good. well, it's mostly very good. But yeah, no, I just, I was
this show's never gonna end, is it? We're just gonna talk.
I thought you already ended it.
No, it didn't end. We're still picking music.
Show's over.
I never asked anyone for final words.
Final words. We're ending the show so that you guys can sleep. He's picking music from Undertale. We talk a lot. There you go.